Big color, bigger savings. It's Sherwin-Williams' biggest super sale. Get 40% off paints and stains October 17th through the 27th with prices starting at $29.39. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
This fall, fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.
Hello, everybody. Good morning and welcome to the United Stands. I'm Mark Goldbridge and this is your latest Manchester United news, the start of a new week. How are we all doing? It's a big week for Manchester United in more ways than one. We are expecting some sort of slash official statement from Manchester United about what's actually going on with the sale. We'll talk about that. Also, I want to talk about a bit of a transfer boost around Marcus Rashford and Barcelona and how likely that is to happen now. An incredibly stupid article that's come out this morning about Benjamin Sesko. I mean, why are we shocked? But also, let's call it out for the prattness that it is. Apparently, he's been voted the worst signing of the summer transfer window by experts. We'll talk about that as well. I mean, when your experts are voting that, they're not experts, are they? Also, Rasmus scores again for Denmark. Talking about strikers, is that a reflection on Manchester United's poor training, club, whatever? We'll talk about that too. Mainu, is there a way back? He's been training hard again. I read a very good article this morning, actually. I'll shout out who that was in a moment, talking about that as well. And also a little bit about Bruno Fernandes' nonsense around people claiming exclusives, of which we already know, to be honest with you. Sly Gales, thank you very much for joining the members club. Actually been here for 52 months, so thank you very much for that as well. But look, it is the start of a new week, and we are already ready to go, of course, as always on the United Stand. Let me just says he's ready to go, but I want to be on my home page here so I can read your live chats while we're at it as well. But let's talk about the sale situation at Manchester United very, very quickly. Don't have masses to add other than what was said last window, but I mean, that's an interesting comment from David Moyes. Don't want to talk about David Moyes. We'll get very, very, very sad if we talk about that. But no, in relation to the sale this week, there is a lot of stuff that's going to come out this week, and it's going to be about the UAE, and there's going to be a lot of people guessing, etc. The point is that we will get some sort of development this week. This is from somebody who has been very, very, very accurate around this sort of stuff. And we will get some sort of development this week. We'll get a lot of noise. We'll get a lot of fake news. And amongst that, we will get some clarity, because it's in everybody's interest to give that clarity. There is no point the Glazers being secretive to Sir Jim Radcliffe. He's an intelligent guy. He's in a vulnerable position if the Glazers decide to sell. Are they united? If they are united, Sir Jim and the Glazers, then there will be a united front, and there will be, you know, some sort of leak, maybe through certain journalists or maybe something official to say, look, this is the plan, we're sticking with the plan, et cetera, et cetera. If there is anything around possibility of selling the football club, then expect things to start to crumble, et cetera. What that was relayed to me is that if this Glazer Sir Jim Radcliffe thing is actually a problem, and let's clarify the problem. If the Glazers are saying, look, you know, we've had this 18 months with you, we can look at sales now, we're going to have a look at what's out there, then Sir Jim Radcliffe has to act very, very quickly and figure out whether he's just going to sit back and allow his, you know, the rug to be pulled from underneath him on what is very much a vanity project, or is he going to start to try to find a way to match whoever tries to buy the club and take it for himself. So it is a big week. I wouldn't say we'd come out of the week with United up for sale or anything like that, but I certainly expect us to come out of the next few days with a little bit more clarity. There has been over the last few days, some very, very serious requests for clarity within the club itself from numerous people, not just Sir Jim Radcliffe and the Glazers, but also, you know, people who work in high positions, shareholders, etc. So if you look at Manchester United in its entirety, you've got the Glazers with about 50% controlling ownership. You've got Sir Jim Radcliffe with about 30%, you know, very, very important. And then you've got 20% shareholders. And they are made up of various different companies, individuals. So, and then you've got the board, you know, people who are meant to be building a longer term vision, you know, whether you're a CEO or whatever, you've still, you know, you want clarity on the position. So everybody, as much as us, is going to want some sort of signal to be coming out of Manchester United. And we will get that. I think we will get that potentially in the next few minutes, potentially in the next few hours, potentially in the next few days. But we will get it because ultimately, if the club is not for sale, and the Glazers and Sir Jim Radcliffe have no intention of selling, and they're, you know, headstrong, headfirst into the world of what they're trying to create, then this will die a death very, very, very quickly. If this is a, we might sell, then that just opens the door and some people might walk in. I think the big thing realistically is you'll get people talking about the UAE, you'll get people talking about Saudi, you'll get people talking about maybe Elon Musk. You know, you'll get people talking about all that like they did 3 years ago. But Sir Jim Radcliffe is still in a very, very strong position. Sir Jim Radcliffe might go to somebody and say, let's do it together. You know, let's do this together. Sir Jim Radcliffe might try and find a way to, you know, buy the whole club himself. So I don't think the sale isn't as simple as there's rich people from the Middle East and we're going to sell the club. There's lots and lots. As I said, I think if a sale does go ahead, we will be going back to where we were 3 years with first bids, second bids, and all that shit again. So, you know, that's where we could be heading. I'm ready to put my coat on and head out into that. I'm sure many of you are, but we need the clarity of what's happening first. And I have seen the latest post from Indy Kaler with his exclusives, which are just utter bollocks, let's be honest. They're saying that the UAE-based consortium are meeting Man United officials in London at 1 p.m. The UAE officials are very serious about purchasing the club and the Glazers are open to all possibilities. I guarantee you that meeting's not happening. Absolutely guarantee you that meeting's not happening at 1 o'clock today because it won't be happening today. It won't. But look, it doesn't mean that there won't be something in the future. I think we just have to wait and see in relation to that. We can come back to that, obviously, but that's where we are at the moment. And we're just expecting and waiting to see what will happen next. Do I think Sir Jim Radcliffe would pay off the debt? No, John, I don't think he'd pay off the debt. Do I think he'd try and buy the whole club? Yeah, I mean, he's wanted a football club for so long. He wanted Chelsea, he wanted half of Barcelona, he's got Man United. I don't think he's going to have I think you've got to just say that Sir Jim Radcliffe is not going to sit there and go, I've been done over here by the Glazers. You know, I've had 18 months of hard work and shit. I spent all this money and they've just gone and sold it behind my back. I don't think he's going to sit there and let that happen. I think there will be some sort of counter argument to persuade the Glazers not to do it, or to try and, you know, keep himself in power in some way, shape or form. Do not underestimate Sir Jim Radcliffe in this scenario. Certainly. In more positive news, look, the debt, I agree with Bulva. The most important thing that needs to happen to Manchester United is the debt needs to go, because it makes you more cash rich for FSP. It allows you to get more money into the club. Simply because expenditure is part of your financial fair play, and we are spending money each year on debt, so it's there on the accounts. And if you remove that debt, like I think last year we had to pay £40 million not going out the club on debt interest, is £40 million that you could spend towards, well, it's the year one payment on a £100 million player, isn't it? I mean, if you buy a £100 million player and you say to a club, we'll give you 40 this year, 40 next year and 20 the next year, they'll go, yes, please. So £40 million not going out on debt interest is potentially a £100 million player. And we don't need to buy a £100 million player, but it could be two £60 million players. So, you know, this is how the debt hinders Manchester United. Right, let me talk to you about some other stuff. Right, I just want to get this off my chest. We're going to talk about Rashford, we're going to talk about Mainoo, we're going to talk about a couple of things as well. But I bring this in, it is topical, And I bring this in because I think it's very, very, very relevant. So effectively, what has happened is that the Athletic have run an article where they've basically spoken to all the games deal makers, agents, etc., asking them for the best and worst deals of the summer transfer window. And their top five were this. Facundo Bernardi, who went to Chelsea, that was their fifth worst deal. Number four, fourth worst deal, Jadon Sancho. Number three, the third worst deal of the summer was Wissa. And the second worst deal was James Trafford to Manchester City. But by a landslide, the worst deal of the summer, as voted for all by all these agents that the Athletic spoke to, was Benjamin Sesko with six votes. Isak and Wirtz got one vote. Antony to Betis got one vote. Gittins to Chelsea got one vote. Connor Cody, who I don't even know where he went to, got one vote. But Benjamin Sesko got six.
This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.
I mean, he's literally not started games until recently, and then he scored two goals in two games in the Premier League, but he is the worst deal of the summer. I mean, tell me Man United don't boil people's piss without telling me Man United don't boil people's piss. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's absolutely incredible. I mean, I was thinking about this. On what planet is Benjamin Sesko even anywhere near one of the worst signings of the summer? Yet you've got, as Caleb says, the hate is real. I mean, this is just like making your mind up about something before you've had it. It's like when I was a kid and I got given mango or avocado and I was like, I don't like it. And you know when they put it in your mouth and you just go, I don't like it. And I'm talking about mango and avocado. Psychologically, you're just switched off. I love avocado and mango now because I've opened my mind. But as a kid, I was like, I don't want that. And it's the same with United. It's just automatically, what can we do to stick the knife into Manchester United? Look, I was trying to be fair. I was thinking, is Benjamin Sesko in any way? Let's deal with it as a deal. Let's look at it as a deal. Did we overpay? £68 million? I seem to recall Liverpool paid more for Ekotike. He's what, 22, 23? He's played Champions League football for the last 4 or 5 years. Arsenal were trying to buy him and went for Gyökeres. I think it was very, very close. He scored two goals in his last two games. He wasn't match fit at the start of the season, so he wasn't starting games. I don't know how you can look at that deal and go, it's the worst deal of the summer. I mean, in 2 or 3 years, he could be one of the best strikers in the world and he'll be 25. In 2 or 3 years, he might be okay and you can get your money back. I mean, I just think it's an example of what we're up against no matter what. And I think as fans, you're always going to make your mind up as a Man United fan, and that's absolutely fine. But this is what we're up against in relation to the media. It is hated, adored, never ignored. But how you could sit there and say Sesko is the worst deal of the summer, I just don't. I mean, how much did Newcastle play for Wissa? 50 million? He's not even fit. He's 28. He's old compared to Sesko. He's not fit. And they paid a lot of money for him. So I think, I'm not saying Sesko was cheap, but I don't think he was expensive. He's young and he's got a lot more potential. And let's not forget, it's not just about the goals. We don't beat Chelsea if it's not for Sesko's flick on. Like, there are other things that he's bringing towards our team as well. So I just find that something to bring in, but I think it's just, you know, this is what I always say about football. There are simpletons everywhere. There are simpletons running football clubs. There are simpleton agents. There are simpleton players. Sometimes that we put them on a pedestal and think they know what they're talking about. Some do, some don't. It's as simple as that. But Sesko's already got more goals in his first games with us than Rasmus did in the same time, says Max. And also, I just want to say, this is topical. Rasmus scored again for Denmark last night. He's on an amazing run. I think most of us are really pleased for him. I really am pleased for him because he's a good lad. He wanted to do well at Man United. Man United fan, I think he gave it everything and it just didn't work out. And I think he's one of those players that you wish the best for. And it's great that it's going well for him. But this is where consistency and agenda doesn't enter the conversation. Because what I'm about to say, I've said about Rashford, I've said about Anthony, I've said it about Sancho. I've said it about McTominay. I don't actually subscribe to the view that all these players that go and leave Man United and do well, I don't think it actually does reflect on the manager. I really don't, because I think if Rasmus had stayed at Man United, I don't think he'd be scoring goals for Denmark, and he certainly wouldn't be scoring goals for Man United because he wouldn't be starting. He'd be a low confidence player like Kobbie Mainoo getting no minutes. And if Kobbie Mainoo had gone to Napoli, maybe he'd be playing well. But that doesn't mean he would have been playing well for Manchester United. And what I'm trying to say is that, like, I think people do run away with the whole, oh, look at Rasmus, he's cooking at Napoli in Denmark. Oh, look at Rashford, he's cooking at Barcelona. But we forget that there's a very good reason for that. They've got a point to prove. They're in a better environment, an easier environment, and they're playing with confidence. It's like a new signing, you know? Exactly. They are like a new signing because they are like new signings. So Rashford doing well at Barcelona, Rasmus doing well at Napoli for Denmark and England as well for Rashford and Denmark for Rasmus. It's not because we're shit. The opportunities were there for them at Manchester United and it didn't work out. I don't think that's on the system or the manager. I think that's on the bigger picture as to why most players at Man United fail now. I don't think that comes down to managers because we've had too many managers. I think it comes down to culture. I think the culture at Manchester United isn't right, and it probably is right at those clubs. But also, let's be honest, the Italian league is not playing for Man United in the Premier League, which is, you know, we're a mid-table club playing in a more intense league, so it's harder. Napoli are one of the best teams in Italy, and it's a slower league. And also, Barcelona are one of the best teams in Europe. So again, it's going to be an easier environment. There's more pressure there, but it's an easier environment. So I I'm really happy that Rasmus is doing well. And we'll talk about Rashford in a moment, but let's not pretend he'd be scoring goals at Man United. Like, I don't think he would. I think that the problems that were there last season would still be there this season. And that is why I think, you know, it's great to see Rasmus doing well. And you know, who knows, he might be back in the Premier League in 3 years' time. He'll still only be 25 scoring goals for somebody else, and you know, that will be something that maybe we look at. But ultimately, we've got Sesko. I'm very happy with Sesko. That's my point. And I think that, yeah, I just think we've got to be very protective of these players. And I think we were very protective of Rasmus when he was here, and we were very patient. And I think we have to be the same with Sesko, because as you can see, people are always trying to knock us down and cause us problems, as we've seen. Just talking about Rashford this morning, very interesting news coming out of Barcelona over the weekend that they're not going to renew Lewandowski's contract. Obviously, he's about 49 now. He's not. I think he's 36 or 37. But they're not going to renew his contract. They're going to look to replace. And there's nothing wrong with that, you know. I mean, Lewandowski's a great of the game, and he's done a great job at Barcelona. Of that, there is no doubt. But, you know, you do have to look at things. And I don't think United look at this sort of stuff, where you go, okay, we've got to look for a replacement now. And I think that's what they're going to do. But this is really positive for Manchester United, because the noise coming out of Barcelona from in relation to Rashford is very different to the last international break, where, if you remember correctly, there was talk of his loan deal being stopped early and him being sent back. And obviously that was dismissed by Hansi Flick and Barcelona as a load of nonsense. But a month later, it's a very different story. He's obviously scored that goal against Newcastle. He's doing quite well. They're very happy with him. And if he can, and the story coming out of Barcelona is that if he continues this form, they always expected an adjustment period in a new league, then there's a very high chance that they will activate the £25 million clause in the summer. Now, with Lewandowski going as well, and with Rashford playing well, and the price being reasonable, I think there is a very, very high chance. And obviously Rashford wants to stay. I think there's a very, very high chance that this deal could happen. And I think we have to take that as a positive this Monday morning, because the amount of players that we have sent on loan and it hasn't worked out, you know, I think we might have looked at it in the summer and gone, what if Rasmus doesn't get game time at Napoli? What if Rashford flops at Barcelona? They're both back next summer. So I think it's very positive on that sense that decisions have been made on those players and those players have moved on and are doing well. I suppose the question is, it's only October. What if Rashford drops off between now and May and Barcelona decide to send him back? I think there's a very slim chance of that. I think injury could cause that problem, but I don't think form will cause that problem because, you know, I mean, Rashford used to be one of my favourite players with Anthony Martial. So I'm well versed in what Rashford's like when he's on it. And I just don't think there's much chance of Rashford dropping off. I mean, whisper it under your breath. It might happen in year two or three. We've seen that before. But in year one, I don't think Rashford will drop off because he's living the dream. He's proving a point. And most important of all, it's World Cup year. I think we're going to see a lot of players performing well this year. And look, that's human nature. Like, if it's not World Cup year, maybe you go, but it's World Cup year. It's World Cup year. Every day it's World Cup year. I want to go to this World Cup. It's going to be a massive World Cup in the States. It's going to be huge. 94 was brilliant. And this is going to be a huge World Cup with loads of focus. Every player is going to want to be there. And to be there, you've got to perform. And to perform, you've got to do it for your club. So I think there's a very high chance that Barcelona will sign Rashford. And of course, he comes with a load of razzmatazz that Barcelona are going to like. He's, you know, it's a big name, can sell shirts, etc. So it's looking good on that front for Manchester United. And I think we should.
This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.
Focus on the positives when they're there. I mean, there's a lot to be bloody negative about, but I think it is a positive that we have got a couple of players in Rasmus and Rashford that are doing very, very well. And the news out of Napoli is that they would like to, you know, take Rasmus in the summer as well. So, you know, it's better than they're not performing. But the point with Barcelona is, I think that, to be fair, I think Barcelona were looking at Rashford and going maybe, whereas probably now they're more looking at yes. And I expect him to maintain his form because it is a World Cup year. And I think when he's motivated, which he is, and he's got a point to prove, which he has. I mean, look, he's not at Man United, he was too comfortable. At Man United, you can turn up, not put it in training, you know, go out, whatever. You know, he'd been there all his life. Maybe it was a bit too comfortable. It's very, very unlikely when you're on loan at Barcelona that you're going to take the piss. It's very, very unlikely. So I think it's looking good in that sense. One player it's not looking good for is Mainoo. Now, I read this article today. I think it was David McDonnell, who has just replaced a certain Pratt at the Manchester Evening News. I got sent the article. I don't go looking for it on that particular outlet. But I read the article, open-minded, and I did actually, you know, think it was quite... I mean, I don't think any of you couldn't have come up with this if I asked you. But it basically was speaking about Mainoo, and it was saying that when you look at Kobbie Mainoo, the only two options for him is Amorim gets sacked and a new manager comes in and picks him, or he gets a loan. And I thought, is it that simplistic? I throw it open to you. Is it that simplistic with Mainoo that his career depends on Ruben Amorim getting the sack and the new manager picking him at Man United, or being allowed to leave Man United on loan? Because what it was basically saying is another international break where Mainoo would hope and expect to be in an England squad, but he couldn't be further from it. He, you know, Man United players who aren't part of internationals have been given 3 days off, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Mainoo's made no secret of the fact that there are no days off. He's out somewhere, warm weather training, I think, posting it on Instagram. But the article goes on to say, you know, he may as well be at Disney World because posting pictures there because he's got about the same amount of chance as playing against Liverpool, whether he's working hard in training on his own or whether he's, you know, sat there with a picture with Mickey Mouse. It wouldn't make any difference because he's not going to play against Liverpool. And I suppose there's an element of truth in that. I mean, I don't really know what more Maynou can do because I'm not there at Carrington. I don't know, you know, I find it very, very difficult to imagine. And I think it's worth saying as well, I find it very difficult to imagine watching Man United in training and seeing Bruno Fernandes running the midfield with Ugarte and Maynou in his shadow. I just don't see how that's happening in training every week. And if it is, that's a problem for Maynou and Ugarte. And maybe that is happening. Maybe in training, Bruno's the boss in the midfield. He's the best midfielder we've got. But that really reflects badly on Maynou and Ugarte. And I just don't know whether I can believe that. I don't know whether I can, you know, understand that. But maybe it is happening. But I certainly would agree with the fact that there's very little chance of Maynou starting against Liverpool and subsequently Brighton, Forest away and Spurs away. And then you're into another international break and then you're 6 weeks out from January. So... you know, is that the scenario? Is Maynou's best chance a sacking of the manager or a loan in January? And to be honest with you, maybe it is. Maybe it is. But, you know, I still do hold hope that... lost my chat. I still do hold hope that the chance will come and he'll grab the chance. But... yeah, it isn't looking great. And look, I'm not going to sit on the fence on it. If something drastic, I suppose I'd put it like this: if something drastic doesn't happen in between now and January, I can't imagine any player sitting there and going, "Are you going to let me go? Are you going to let me go?" I mean, you won't. He's basically not played football for 18 months. He had a bad season last season in relation to being picked. Pretty much since Amorim came in, which is nearly a year, he's been nowhere near the starting lineup for Man United. So, I mean, if Casemiro gets injured or Bruno, or he's almost waiting for that. And then he's got to grab that opportunity. But, you know, the sad thing is, I genuinely think if Bruno Fernandes broke his leg and he was out for 3 months and Maynou played, I actually think we'd all be going, "We were right. We were right. Why didn't this happen?" I might be completely wrong, but I'm entitled to my opinion. I genuinely think if Maynou was given Bruno's position for a long period of time, I think we would all be going, "Well, this is why he should have done it." And that's my stance. And I might be wrong. You might not like it, but that is my stance. That's exactly what I think. I really, really do. And I think the reason he struggles with 10-minute cameos and 15-minute cameos, because when he came on against Brentford, I think he was at fault for the third goal, wasn't he? Because I think, you know, there's a lot of noise. And when you're being given opportunities that aren't really opportunities, you've got to do something amazing. So what I'm trying to say is like, if you're the stand-in chef, because that's a bad example. I always use chef. If you're a West End show, I don't know, Phantom of the Opera, and the Phantom has a night off and you're the stand-in, so you come in, you know he's back tomorrow. So what can you actually do? You can only fuck up, because even if we produce a worldie, they're still not going to give you the spot. And I think with Maynou, it's the same. It's like he comes into situations and it's like he's not going to win the place anyway. There is no pathway to winning that place. So you probably start trying to do things that you shouldn't do. Maybe you try and take a player on. Maybe you try a pass that's a worldie pass that you shouldn't play, because you're trying to do stuff to catch the eye. And then that makes you make a mistake. And I think this is the point I'm trying to make, is that if you gave Maynou that position and empowered him and said, "You're going to play for the next four games," you probably relax a little mentally and go, I can just play my game. I can just relax into it. And he doesn't get given those opportunities. Class of 99 says, "I'm happy with Sesko and that we got him instead of Jokeres. Also, let's be objective here. Barcelona's not an easy environment by any means. Let's give credit," says Class of 99. I mean, I don't really know what your angle is there, mate, because I didn't not give him credit, but I think some people are always trying to make the world burn and you have history for it. And other people who are watching might say, "Oh, Mark, you've been a bit harsh on Class of 99, but I know who you are and I know what your angle is. And you do try and stir things up without substance. Literally just said he's got a very good chance of staying at Barcelona because he's doing very, very well. And also, I can't see him dropping off this year because he's motivated. He's got a point to prove. He's playing in a club that suits him and he wants to go to the World Cup. So if that's not credit, I don't really know what it is. Why is Isidore performing at Sunderland when Hoyland was at a bigger club, says Joey? I mean, that is an incredible comment. So what you're basically saying is, why is a player at a different club doing well and a player at Man United doesn't? Go back to what Class of 99 just said. You're talking about Sunderland with low expectations, who are happy to be in the Premier League. And you're talking about Man United, the most biggest pressure football club in the world. I mean, there's your answer. Sesko had a slow start and he needs to do better, says Ghost of 92. Wirtz had a slow start and he needs time. It's the media that pressurises United. But Sesko didn't have a slow start. He factually didn't have a slow start. He didn't have much of a pre-season and Amrim didn't pick him. And to be honest with you, I think Sesko has had to wait for his opportunity. If you go back to the last international break, we were building towards Man City and Cunha and Mount were injured. If they'd have been fit, I don't think Sesko would have started against Man City. I think he would have gone with Mount as a false nine or Cunha as a false nine. And the same thing happened against Chelsea. Neither of them were really fit. And it was that game where the ball went to Sesko and he flicked. I mean, it didn't do much against Man City, let's be honest. But against Chelsea, it was his flick on that got the Mbeumo red card. And I think that was the moment where Amrin went, right.
This fall, fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.
This is something that we can use, and we have been going a little bit more direct. So I don't think he had a slow start. I just don't think he was going to get picked. I think he was a bench player for Amrim at the start based on fitness and what he preferred. But, you know, now in the last few games, literally Chelsea, Brentford and Sunderland, they're the three games that he's really, I think, been vindicated and given confidence by Amrim. And lo and behold, massive assist in the red card. And then a goal against Brentford and a goal against Sunderland. So I think his season for me started against Chelsea, which was three games ago. I like Rasmus, but do we let him go or not? Votes. Well, he will go, Tom. We don't really have any say in it because it's an obligation. It's not an obligation. Napoli basically have the power. So I think we'd have to pay Napoli to not take him. So I don't see Rasmus or Rashford as players that we're going to go, you're not going. I'll answer the question. I didn't want Rasmus to go because I felt that beyond Sesko, where's Obi? I mean, doesn't even get on the bloody bench. The plan seems to be, and sometimes I think it will happen, and Robert McCormack probably agree with me, I think there might be games where Sesko gets benched for Mount and he plays with a false nine. So I would have liked to have kept Rasmus because I think he's a striker and I think you need more than one. But the scenario's worked out a lot better for him. We just need to keep Sesko fit. Max says Sesko's already got more goals in his first games with us than Rasmus did. We did that one. Adrian says, how is Wirtz not the worst deal of the summer based on season to date and performance? Wow, exactly. And Patrick, and I think Wirtz will end up being a good player at Liverpool, by the way. I don't think we should be, you know, calling players flops when it's not even Christmas, but he's not had the best start, has he? Patrick Lynch says, given how long the process was last time just for a partial sale, any reports that say we have a full sale imminent makes me highly sceptical. Any buyer has to deal with the Glazers and Ineos. United do nothing quickly, says Patrick. Well, that's what I mean. Like, it's preposterous that somebody would put it out there that Man United have got a 1 o'clock meeting with the UAE. I mean, it's just preposterous, like absolutely ridiculous. Because you're right, this if this sale process goes ahead, it's going to be far more complicated than it was last time. The Glazers were very much in control last time. They have a relevant, they have a portion of control this time, but there's also 30%, which is Sir Jim Ratcliffe. So it will be a very, very difficult sale. And whilst I think the Glazers might be open to sale, I don't think Sir Jim Ratcliffe's open at all. So how do you surmount that? So it'd be a long, long process. And it might be the start of that process. But, you know, as I said, I would expect at some point this week that we will get clarity on what's happening, because no business wants to operate under a cloud of uncertainty. It undermines what they're trying to do. And I would guarantee that Sir Jim Ratcliffe is saying to the Glazers, what's actually happening? I'm a businessman. You know, if you're looking to sell, let's start the process. But if you're not looking to sell, we need to show a united front, and we need to put it out there that there is no sale. And I think that will come this week. My conspiracy theory: Sir Jim never wanted to fix the club. He and the Glazers made a deal to cut costs, raise value, and sell high for maximum profit, says John. I mean, that would be massively disappointing if the lifelong Manchester United fan who wants to put the Manchester back into Manchester is Manchester United is basically just an asset stripper who, you know, makes the club more sellable. It doesn't mean it's impossible. If you suspend belief for a moment and say the Glazers brought Sir Jim Ratcliffe in to, you know, make the club far more attractive and make a bit of profit in 18 months, then, you know, that could be possible. But it flies in the face of, we've been lied to, basically, if that happens. G'day, Mark. Keep up the good work. Says Andre Smith. Thank you very much for that. And sorry, let me just come back here. What's the Bruno story? I'll tell you that now. Pressure at every club, Sunderland playing to survive, says Joey. I mean, you can do your you can do your rage bait little smiley cry faces, but mate, you clearly don't understand the sport you think you're talking about. If you think playing up front for Sunderland is the same as playing at Manchester United, you need to go and educate yourself, pal. I'm not even being arrogant. It's a fact. Playing for Barcelona is very different to playing for Real Betis. Playing for Bayern Munich is very different to playing for St. Pauli. Playing for PSG is very different to playing for Le Havre. You know, it's playing for Celtic is very different to playing for St. Johnstone. If you don't understand that, then we're wasting time in this great community. Anyone else think it's a bit strange there are certain players with less severe injuries now that are, I don't know what that means, Doug, to be honest with you. I genuinely don't know what that means. Anyway, let me come back. So in relation to Bruno Fernandes, there has been a few, I mean, look, this is a news show. We're topical, of course. So there's been a few reports this morning that have caught my eye. Well, people have basically sent it to me and said you should talk about it on the morning show. Man United are open to selling captain Bruno Fernandes and have held talks with the Saudi Arabian officials over a blockbuster sale in 2026. This is apparently breaking news. It's the second time in a week that we've had this as breaking news from source I wouldn't put in my kitchen cupboard. I don't have a kitchen cupboard at the moment anyway, but that's why I'm in this room. But the point is, this is regurgitation story. This is lazy. This is not news. Bruno Fernandes nearly went to Saudi Arabia in June. The offer on the table was very palatable, but Man United and Bruno decided that now was not the time. I believe that Man United didn't want to risk that upheaval this summer. I think they should have done, but I think they were scared of it. And Bruno Fernandes, I think, ultimately decided that playing in the Premier League ahead of the World Cup at his age was probably the right decision. And I think there was a general conversation that, look, this is probably something we revisit next summer. And I think that's where we are. And I think it's as simple as that, because it really isn't that deep. It was a decision by United and Bruno that whilst it was appealing and there was some consideration, now was not the time. Let's have a look at it in 12 months, because this summer just gone, the summer before that and the summer before that, the Saudis have tried for Bruno and they'll try again next summer. So it's not news. It's not breaking news. And Man United have not sat there and negotiated with Saudis that we're going to sell him in the summer. It's not a story that's going to go away, and it will keep happening. But it was Ben Jacobs who mentioned this in bloody July, that Man United and Saudis and Bruno will revisit this next summer, and there's probably a chance that he'll go. So it's just regurgitation of the same story we already know. I think there is a desire amongst some of us that this does happen next summer, and there may well be a desire from Bruno, and there may well be an acceptance from Manchester United that they made a mistake, because Man United decided not to do this. They were very adamant against it. They may well have looked at it based on the start of the season, not getting a midfielder in, and they may well realise what everyone else has realised, we should have done the deal. Because I'm not so sure at the start of June, when they rejected that deal, that they thought they would start the season without a midfielder coming in. And I think if somebody had said to Amorim and the board at the start of June, if you keep Bruno, we won't get a midfielder, I think they might have made a different decision. I think they were thinking they were going to get a midfielder and keep Bruno. So there may well be an acceptance from United now that, look, the Bruno midfield thing doesn't work. We need to rebuild our midfield. That's a lot of money that can come into the football club. I also have a conspiracy theory that this deal will get done before the World Cup, which allows that money to come in this football financial year, which massively helps us the next financial year, because we've cleared a lot of our expenditure from this year before the year closes. But that is, that is a conspiracy theory. We'll have to wait and see what happens. But look, we're certainly not sat there negotiating with the Saudis right now. That's certainly not the case. I don't think for one minute that will be the case either. More stuff coming out about Rashford this morning. They're ready to take up the option to make his loan move from Man United a permanent one. And Flick is very, very happy with him. So look, I mean, that's a positive. That's a positive for Manchester United. I think the last thing we want is a situation where the manager gets sacked and people start saying, bring Starboy home and all that. He might, but I think you look at Rashford, I've seen him play a few times. He looks happy. He feels liberated. He's doing well. He's at a club where they're better than Man United. So ultimately, you want that move to be permanent for everybody so that everybody can move on. Which is why I really do just hope Amorim can turn things around at Manchester United. Let me just come back here as well. So you expect a sale this week? No. I don't expect a sale this week. Starhedge says, asset stripper can be a good alternative for the term gold digger. Yeah, and look, just to go back on that, I spoke to somebody yesterday. I won't give their name because they will be reporting it themselves very, very soon. But that they're very good on this sort of thing. And, you know, the general conversation was this week, there will be some clarity that comes out. It might not be the clarity that everybody wants, but there will be some clarity because you can't just leave it. It's not actually in the interests of the football club itself to just leave this out there because there is no clarity. Sometimes United might look at something and go, oh, you know what? We don't need to say anything, you know, like they did with Ollie a couple of years ago or 3 or 4 years ago when we'd lost to Liverpool and we went into an international break and we were all like, they've got to say something, they've got to say something, and they didn't say anything. So realistically, apparently the share price, I don't know whether this is right, this is from Google, the share price went up to, is stabilizing now. United, let's be clear, United are the sort of club that sometimes can just let it leave it and say nothing. You know, we don't need to say anything. they don't have to say something. Like, just because there's all this talk of the Glazers potentially looking for a sale doesn't mean that United have to come out and say we're not for sale. That in itself can be quite definitive. Maybe the Glazers aren't really thinking of selling, but if somebody puts the money on the and I think this is the most important thing. There was a few reports last week, I think even The Athletic said it, that if somebody gives the Glazers $5 billion, they'll sell. I'm not so sure about that. I'm not so sure that that's their stance, but maybe that is their stance. Maybe their stance is, look, if somebody gives us $5 billion, we'll sell it, but we're not expecting anybody to give us $5 billion, so we'll carry on. It might not be the definitive we're not for sale. It might be, look, that's the price. We're not negotiating on it. So if you want to have a chat, we'll have a chat, but we're not desperate to sell. We will only sell at that price, in which case, you know, what changes? But as I said at the start of the video, I think you have to factor into Jim Radcliffe. I mean, is he a reluctant seller or is he a on board seller? I would say he's a reluctant seller. So I think we need some clarity because there are two big players in the game. There's the Jim Radcliffe and there's the Glazers. And if the Glazers have decided now is the time that they want to sell, then things are going to have to start moving in that direction. If they're not going to do that, then I think that you're going to get something this week that says, you know, it was, you know, very, very much news to them, which has sort of come out anyway. And because what you don't want to do, and this is a good point, you do not want to destabilize the regeneration project. And the regeneration project is locked in with a government that is, you know, under a lot of pressure at the moment. So if you're trying to get private investment and you're trying to get government backing for what is a huge, huge project, which, let's be clear, the government do want in that area because, you know, it's a big, big project that Labour can go, look at what we're doing in Manchester. That's not going to fill any government or any private investor with confidence to sign this off if Manchester United's owners are going, we might be selling to the UAE. So there will need to be clarity. It's not, I don't think it's as simple. And I agree with what Nelly said, their name said yesterday. It's not in United's interests really to just sit there and go, it's nothing to do with us. Maybe. I think there is too much going on at United that you want to show leadership. So you either are selling or you're not. And I think it could be today. It could be tomorrow. I know there are a few more reputable journalists that are really quiet around this at the moment, and they're trying to get some clarity. Look, all I'd say is I remember going through the process for a year, 18 months, when it was the gym against Qatar. And most days we would talk about it, and there was a load of good journalism around it. Very different to you know, it wasn't the Manchester Evening News and the BBC and you know, the Telegraphs that were leading on that. It was specific journalists who knew that world. And I'm pretty confident that we will get some clarity on it very, very soon. They had a price 2 years ago. It was never triggered, says Shane. Benjay says that would shed more light on the fact that this club is so terribly run. There's heavy rumours, but no clarity for the fans. I bet they'd not say anything because the share prices will go up. Also, there's same story. The Glazers are meeting UAE this afternoon, says Lawrence. Yeah, but it's from a crap source, Lawrence. I mean, I know people want to believe that outlet is genuine because they got a good story on Belabor and David Ornstein gave them a shout out. But I think the behavior of that account since then has gone very similar to the behavior before then. It's, you know, pay to sign to our subscription, you know, 10 a.m. and 10 p.m. drops about a load of bollocks. It's a shame because if you find credibility, stay credible. But it hasn't panned out that way in many people's opinions. And I see under the replies, it's just like getting the piss taken out of them again. So I don't think people really class that as a credible outlet. And I do not believe for 1 second that Man United officials are meeting at 1 o'clock in London with UAE officials. I just don't believe that at all. I think it's their shite. Luke Shaw will wave goodbye to Harry in 27, Bruno the year after that, then sit down with Abraham to discuss a new contract, says George. I think there will be a sale, says Andrew Russell. Sorry, but it won't be in the short term. Sale will happen some point in the next few years. See, I get quite skeptical about that, because, you know, when, I mean, I didn't want the Glazers to get into bed with Ineos. I didn't want that. And what annoyed me is that the people that were pro Ineos made up lies that they slept under the carpet when it happened. Like, there were people who are still at it now, gobbing off with their sources, who were basically doing tweets and videos saying Sir Jim's plan is to get 25%, and then in 2026 he'll own all of the club. And the minute the deal was announced, there was no pathway to or obligation to buy the 100% of the club. There never has been. So we got lied to, and people, you know, made it up in their head. And that's what worries me about all this sort of stuff. You just get all this bollocks about lies and this, that, and the other. If Sir Jim Ratcliffe had bought the club on that Christmas Eve and said, there's an obligation that I buy the club in its entirety in 2026, I think everybody would have had a very, very different approach to it. But we've not seen any of that. I want a pathway to a full sale and the debt clearance. I think we all do. If we can find that, it'd be very, very interesting. I don't think you're going to end up with your perfect owner. I don't even know what the perfect owner is. A lot of people are very opposed to money coming in from the Middle East. A lot of people are very opposed to money coming in from private investment funds. So basically what you're looking for is an individual billionaire who worships Manchester United and is only interested in football. It's a very, very narrow opportunity to find somebody who will do that. I'm surprised we haven't found anybody who will do that, by the way, because to me, and maybe I'm a little bit biased, but if Real Madrid was for sale, or Barcelona was for sale, or Bayern Munich was for sale, I think you would find that individual. So it surprises me that Manchester United, who are on that level, didn't find an individual who was obsessed with making Man United the greatest team in the world and had the money to do it. Now, some people might say, well, that was Sheikh Jassim, but he didn't pay the money, did he? So it does surprise me. Do you think Dan Ashworth is in a pub somewhere saying, I told you so, in relation to Amorim, says Dave the Brave? I think Dan Ashworth's a prat. So I don't give a shit if he's sat in a pub saying, I told you so. I think he's a prat. He wanted to bring Potter in. He wanted to bring Southgate in. I don't think you can sit there saying, I told you so, when he was the guy looking to bring Southgate and Potter in. And God knows what other players he wanted to bring in. I don't subscribe to the view that Dan Ashworth is some sort of legend. I think Ineos and the Glazers have done a shit job, but even they had the foresight to get rid of Dan Ashworth. So maybe you flip it that way. Maybe you say even the Glazers and Sir Jim realized Dan Ashworth was shit. Some people want to hold him up as like the guy. I don't see him as the guy at all. I really don't. I don't think when you look at what he did at Newcastle, it was that good. People forget he didn't sign Bruno Guimaraes there. And a lot of what Brighton did was after he went as well. I personally, you know, don't think, I don't rate Dan Ashworth. I don't. I hoped he was going to be good at United, but when they got rid of him, and from what we were told, I think they were right. So I don't think he's that good, to be honest with you. Okay. Lovely stuff. Okay. We are back at 2 o'clock. I have an 8 o'clock show for you tonight as well. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. I'm glad that we're on the homeward straight of this international break, and we're working towards the weekend now, Liverpool on Sunday. I'm actually excited about that. I know some people are starting to get nervous. I'm actually excited about that. I mean, I've watched Liverpool a lot this season. I don't think they're at it. They could click on Sunday, but it's after an international break. I think a lot of teams are sluggish after an international break, which could play into our hands if we go there and just, you know, look to counter. I think we could frustrate. Take care, everyone. Stay safe. I'll speak to you on the next one.